You do fear as the Ten Commandments are wheeled out, a Christianity that is sapless and joyless, casting sour looks at young people's fun, don't you? And Charmaine's asked me to use a guest lunch to introduce the subject. Well, I've done my own research, a not entirely representative sample, and I kind of asked the question along the lines of the Ten Commandments, what do you think? Here was one of the early replies. Morality's out of date. He mumbled something about old-fashioned and no one's really interested in it anymore. And after a bit more, he said, morality went out with God. Which isn't quite true, because I remembered reading through Richard Dawkins's The God Delusion, and certainly he is out with God. But one of the 10 chapters, there are only 10 in the book, is devoted to morality. Very defensive, Dawkins is too, about the idea that if you reduce life to the survival of the fittest, you've lost all basis for ethical behavior. If there's no God, why be good? One of his sections is entitled, as Dawkins battles to justify an atheist's ethics. But I knew what the guy meant. Morality may be out, but actually, best practice, that's what workplaces like to pride themselves on, isn't it? And HR departments are forever telling you what you should or shouldn't, must or mustn't do. Actually, the Ten Commandments are really God's best practice for the workplace and everywhere else. Very personal. You, singular, shall not. But it's the sort of personal that affects colleagues, friends, society. Not claustrophobic in their detail, as I say, only just over 300 words, but crystal clear in the essentials. Not buying in to the false tolerance we sometimes pretend to prize. It all comes out of a relativist mindset. You know, there is no absolute truth, no absolute right or wrong, which is fine in theory, but up close and personal, we nearly all tend to change our mind, don't we? Let's discuss adultery along the lines of, do you take sugar? You may or may not, but we won't think any of the worst of each other, whichever way, will we? With sugar, maybe. Adultery? Not if it's my wife you're committing adultery with. You see, the Ten Commandments don't treat us as plaster cast saints, but the mixed up people we really are, and they clearly wrap the label poison round what damages and destroys. And it's good. It's healthy, isn't it, to know what I'm handling? The 21st century is very particular about clear labelling. The Ten Commandments do it for us. I mean, you'll shatter any office with a finger in the till, a sprinkling of deceit, an illicit affair with the boss or the secretary. The Ten Commandments are God's best practice. Here's the second polling response. Rules leave you narrow. You know, the killjoy effect is still strongly linked to the Ten Commandments, isn't it? The thought that rules restrict. We're not a generation that's big on rules. Not quite sure which generation ever is big on rules, but we're certainly not the one. And the idea that if my life was to be governed by rules, I could find it narrow and cramping. Yeah, we understand that, don't we? But of course, that is a one-dimensional view of rules. I mean, think of railway tracks. They're very narrow and restricting when they're laid out in front of you. You can't go to the left or the right. But to the railway train, they're what gives it freedom. The ability to run, to travel, to live. Well, it's more like that with the Ten Commandments. They bring freedom. They're given originally, actually, to show God's people how to live as they headed to a new land with all kinds of fresh cultural expectations there. They're given to make God's people distinctive, but not narrow. So come to the series, even if you're not a Christian yourself, and you'll get a chance to peer through the window at what Christian living is meant to look like, to put your head around the door, so to speak, at Christian life. And you'll find it's like the TARDIS. You know, it looks small on the outside, but it's deceptively huge on the inside. The Ten Commandments bring freedom. I mean, look at some of the familiar ones. Turn over to the page, for example, to verse 14. You shall not commit adultery. Here's an article I just picked up yesterday. It was explaining how more women are having office affairs than before. Partly, at least, because there are more women in the workplace. One woman described her office affair. She was a journalist. She had an affair with a magazine editor. You know, late nights, desperate deadlines, threw them together. One thing leads to another, and... And here's what she said. I found it all the more powerful coming from the woman in the affair. You might expect it of the man. She said this: what about his wife stuck at home with a tiny baby and a demanding toddler? I'm ashamed to say that I never gave her a single thought. I had my own guilt to deal with, casually lying to my boyfriend of 3 years about crazy deadlines and imaginary meetings and trying not to mention Nigel's name too often. Well, who's tasting freedom there? Or look at the next one. You shall not steal. I mean, which of us likes to live life with keys in our pockets all the time, weighing us down and no doubt making holes in them and everything else? Now, if only you shall not steal was lived out. When I was back in Sheffield, before I came down here, we started a church in the city centre because there were all sorts of new blocks of housing going up in the city centre. It was being repopulated. And what was being built there was what they like to call gated communities. It's a complete lie, by the way. The gated bit is right, but the very gating almost denies any chance of community. In one of them, the key you got let you through the front door. I mean, this is sort of several stories high, blocks of flats. Let you through the front door, and it would also give you access to your particular corridor, but you couldn't go anywhere else in the building, even though you lived there. I think this was a few years back, but I suspect was probably still true. A friend of mine in a Norfolk village. I mean, they never even bothered to lock their front door when they went out. Well, I know which atmosphere I'd rather live in. I know where freedom is. It's where someone would only keep to the Ten Commandments, at least to the you shall not steal one. Or look at the next one down. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbour. I'm still taking my hat off, so to speak, mentally, to the Christian PA who started with a new boss and said to him, I think it was the first day, I've got X on the phone. Oh, tell him I'm out. No. Now, tell him I'm out. No. What good are you as my PA if you won't do a simple thing like that? Well, do you want me to deceive you, she said. Well, of course not. Well, your best evidence that I won't lie to you is that I'm not willing to lie for you. Or the last one, you shall not covet. How many offices has that ruined? Coveting someone else's job and all that follows from it, what we euphemistically label office politics. Because see, when I covet something, it's not just that I want what you've got, but I want you out of it. See, start looking at it this way and suddenly you can stop pitying the Christian, can't you? Stop looking at them as rule-bound freaks edging their way through life tied up by yards and yards of religious red tape. That's the caricature of the Christian. A caricature, admittedly, some Christians seem to like to live up to. But the reality is that Ten Commandments means Christians have found not the rules, but the values that give freedom to live. Morality's out of date. I don't know. Here are God's best practice. Rules leave you narrow. No, here are the values that give freedom. Here's my third bit of polling. It came up with this. Laws drive me away from God. I knew where she was coming from. To her, Christianity was a sort of policeman's religion. And the Ten Commandments reinforce that, don't they? You know, obey the rules and all will be well. Break one well, some version of three strikes and you're out will apply. To other people, actually, it's not so much that way round. It's the fact that Ten Commandments smack of smug Christians, which is an awful mix. You know, the self-righteous type who talk as if they have values, unlike anyone else. They are self-important, but you suspect if you only knew what their life was really like, then the hypocrisy would be overpowering. So it's important, isn't it, to see how they start. I mean, just come back to the beginning on the sheets you've got there. See the setting. It starts like this, and God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And if you let that sink in, suddenly it's changed everything. The Ten Commandments were never given as the way to get to God. You know, keep them and God will help you. Now look at verse 2 again. See, the living God has already met these people, owned them as his, rescued them. And that's before they've been given the Ten Commandments, never mind keeping them. Now, I want to say this, that far from the Ten Commandments driving me away from God, the Ten Commandments drive me to God. Now, not because I keep them. I'm like you. Read them and they're signposts of my failure. Understand them and they'll do it in neon lights. Read the Ten Commandments to get to God and I just feel bad. I am guilty. I don't belong. Getting to God is out of reach for me. There's only one person in history who's kept them. Not even the Bible giants like Abraham, he lied. Moses, he murdered. David, he committed adultery. Paul, he coveted. There's only Jesus. Which is why, as well as being so attractive, Jesus is so intimidating. A friend of mine who quite fancies himself as the sort of amateur golfer and his handicap's been coming down, he was playing with a guy he had met who played off scratch, and they kind of came to the first tee, you know, and the guy playing off scratch just hit it straight down the fairway. My friend, already uptight, hooked it and sort of tacked his way down the fairway. And it went like this at pretty much every hole, you know. The one off scratch, he was straight down the middle. My friend was going from one side to the other. They got to about the 13th tee. The one off scratch, as usual, straight down the middle. My friend hooking into the rough. And as he went there to try and find his ball, the scratch player came across to help him. My friend just rounded on him and said, "Go away. You keep on showing me up." Well, you see, it can be like that with Jesus, can't it? If I'm looking for applause, now what a good person you are, Hugh. Of course you deserve it. If that's how I'm coming, I'll never get to God. And I'll always want to keep Jesus at arm's length. But if the Ten Commandments have humbled me, if they've exposed my failings, if they've shown me a charge sheet as long as your arm, if you like, then there's no one I'll want to rush to more than Jesus. Actions have consequences. Wrongdoing needs punishment. Sin brings judgment. And the only place I know where sin has been punished and there's a blank charge sheet, room for me to pin my own list of failures there and have them dealt with. The only place that can be done is the cross of Jesus. The innocent Christ who died the sinner's death, who took a sinner's penalty so that he could rescue us. Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. Actually, what the Ten Commandments do is show me I need a rescuer. The God who gave them showed me the life I failed to live. But he's the God who's become my rescuer. And if you've got the courage to join us this autumn, to come along these next Thursdays, to let the Ten Commandments speak to you, let their reality expose and humble you, Let them drive you, not away from God, but to his Christ. Thanks for listening.